All right. How about glory in raising the dead?
Oh, yeah.
Could there be glory in that?
Yeah.
Well, me thinks so. In returning to John's gospel, we encounter a scene a few passages later in chapter 11 that opens with an even greater tragedy. Lazarus, a young man in seemingly perfect health, suddenly falls ill and dies. Mm. He and his sister are some of Jesus' closest friends and most devout followers. And when Jesus hears of his beloved friend is sick, he deliberately waits to show up to Lazarus' home in Bethany. Wow. Until he has already been dead for 4 days.
Right.
And kind of four being, all right, it's long past the we can just shake him awake and like, oh, he was really not dead.
He swooned.
And there's this kind of idea that the soul stays with the body in Jewish kind of mysticism, stays four with the soul three. For 3 days.
Yeah.
And so why does he wait for? There it is right there.
Now, some would suggest that, you know, it's callous that Jesus waited this 4 days, right? Even scandalous, right, this response from Jesus.
And a side point, the Jesus weeping here, the shortest verse, is not at the death of Lazarus because he knows what he's doing.
Oh,
yeah. So Jesus is weeping. I'm not going to get into it, but there's another reason. It's not just, oh, Jesus looked at the horrors of death. I'm sure he was moved to compassion, but why is he weeping if he waited on purpose and he's going to raise him from the dead? There's a different reason that we should look into, but that's a side lecture that we'll give later.
And so Christensen tells us that, given Jesus' foresight of the matter and requisite powers to heal Lazarus, some people would say that this is kind of scandalous, right? That he could have easily prevented his death and all the grieving and the crying and the weeping that it produced. But Jesus has a good purpose that will emerge right from the core of the pain of death. He declares, quote, this illness does not lead to death, right? That's verse 4. Now, by death, he means permanent separation, from the presence of this world. Instead, Lazarus' passing, verse 4 says, is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. So there it is, right? This death glorifies God. This heinous thing, this perhaps scandalous, callous acting on Jesus's part, perhaps, will lead to God's glory, right? Now, clearly, Jesus wasn't callous, right? He did cry over, various things. And he, this really wasn't a scandalous response. This was part of what God was attempting to accomplish, right?
But see, he violated Lazarus' free will by not asking him if he wanted to be raised for the dead. Lazarus could have said no. It's clear the case. He has free will. The dead person in the tomb must be able to say, yes, I'm slightly more still alive in here. My ear hasn't fallen off my body. I'm responding well because I desire to. Shouldn't use desire. Because I want to. Because I know Jesus really, really well. It seems like Lazarus doesn't have any say.
No say in this at all.
Okay, right. I wonder if we could apply that to some other things. So the healing of the blind man in John 9 was unexpected and remarkable. But death always appears irreversible.
Right? Yeah, right. So clearly, it's unexpected, right? And that this healing happened with the blind man. But what in the world can you do about death?
That's the
end of it.
So when Jesus calls Lazarus to return from the grave, it strains credibility. Who expects the coming reversal of this conflict? A dramatic shift of emotions among the dumbstruck witnesses occurs in the span of mere minutes, and in the compacted moment, God's glory lights on them with unforgettable force. Probably a story they talked about for a little bit. They go from utter despair to overwhelming joy, from shouldering the unbearable curse of death to beholding the wondrous blessings of life restored. The polarities serve as the magnifiers of God's extrinsic glory. No wonder so many come to faith in the Christ.